Our guest today in the KPLU studios is a singer who is so loved by her fans that she can even get people in her own hometown to mispronounce the name of that town when they call her the Soul Queen of New Orleans. She's a Grammy Award winner. She was recently chosen by NPR listeners and a panel of experts as one of the 50 great voices in the history of recording. Congratulations and welcome, Miss Irma Thomas.
Thank you.
I hope you're going to have as much fun as I am.
I usually do.
I want to start off the session with one of the old songs, one of those old records, Irma.
One of those old records would be just fine, called I Wish Someone Would Care. Sitting home alone, thinking about my past, wondering how I made it and how long it's gonna last. Success has come to lots of them, failure's always there. Time waits for no one, and I wish someone would care. Think you're happy when you wear your smile, but what about your tribulations and all of your trials? Smiles hide lots of things, the good, the bad, the hurt, all of this goes too. And I wish someone would care. Don't you think someone should care? Why don't you need someone to care? Sit down and think about yourself.
That was a song that was, you recorded that in 1964.
Correct.
Did you record that at J&M Studios in New Orleans, or do you remember?
No, that was done in California.
Was it?
Oh, yes. That was done right after Imperial was bought out by Liberty.
Ah.
And they brought me out to California, and that whole session was done out there.
Well, I'd like to take you just a couple of years back beyond that.
Sure.
Maybe 1960, when you were recording at J&M Studios.
Yep.
Owned by Mr. Cosimo Matassa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's the man.
Well, it just seems to me that the little that I know about the recording scene, the music scene in New Orleans at that time, it seems that that was such a rich and close family of musicians that worked in that studio. Is that true or not?
That's true. In most cases, whenever there was a group of guys who could go in the studio and get the job done quickly, they were always often used repeatedly. Keep in mind, back in those days, we didn't have all this digital stuff where you could go in and redo and all that. If somebody made a mistake, not necessarily the singer, any instrument that made a mistake, you have to stop and start all over again. So when you got musicians who were able to come in and do it and get it done within a few takes, those were the ones who were often used repeatedly.
Yeah, as we are today in this studio, everybody was in the same room, no drums off in the other
room.
No scratch tracks for vocals, nothing like that. Well, there was a very young man named Mac Rebenack who became known to the world later on as Dr. John, who played on your first recording.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I suppose guitar at that time.
Yes, he did play guitar on that one. It was he on guitar, and if I remember correctly, Eddie Bowe played piano.
Oh, my.
Robert Parker did the solo on that song. I'm not sure who the drummer was, but yeah.
You had such a rich relationship with songwriter and arranger Alan Toussaint.
Yeah, ironically, that didn't come about until after Don't Mess With My Man, because when I first auditioned for that group, a minute group, when they were auditioning artists to go on the label.
On the minute label.
Yeah, I was turned down.
What?
Yes. So somewhere along the light bulb came on and said, we better take that one next time it comes along. So, you know, that's what happened.
And Alan Toussaint was part of that decision-making process?
I have no idea.
I see. Well, what were some of the songs that you collaborated with Alan?
I didn't actually collaborate with Alan at all. Alan had this unique knack of being able to write songs to fit the vocal ability of whichever artist he was producing at that time. And there were a group of us who he wrote for, and he would more or less customize a song for that person.
I guess, yeah, because when you think about Lee Dorsey, for example, he didn't have what you would call great range.
No, but he had great songs written for him because it fit right into his character of his voice.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And you choose songs that you can inhabit.
Yeah, well, that didn't come until later. When I was recording with Minnie those early days, decisions were always made by the producer, per se. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until later when I started recording in California where I had some voice as to what was going to be sung. At least they allowed me to say yay or nay on a song, but I was so naive about the business at that time. I just sung if they stuck it in front of me and said, here, this is one we want you to do, and gave me the right key to sing it, and I would sing it. It wasn't until some years later when I got with the Rounder Company that I was able to really make some choices as to what songs I really wanted to sing and how I felt about them, and this is where I started making decisions on songs I wanted to live with.
You have a new release out. It's called Soul Queen of New Orleans, 50th anniversary celebration.
Yeah.
And it's a somewhat of a retrospective of this work that you've done on Rounder, but you also included three new songs on it. Would you like to do one of those new ones for us now?
Yes, I would. I'd like to do Let It Be Me. Let it be me. The one who holds you when the world outside has been cold to you, to set you free, let it be me. Ooh, I can make you smile. Yes, I understand you, and I will comfort you like no other woman can do to set you free. Let it be me. Let it be me.
All the love I've got. Let it go.
Let it go.
Take me, Lord, I'm ready. That was beautiful. Thank you very much. That was Let It Be Me, Irma Thomas and the Professionals. Irma, over the past 40 years, storms have been trying to run you out of New Orleans, and you keep on coming back. In 1969, after Hurricane Camille, you found it necessary to move away for a while, make a living, but you came back.
Yeah.
And Katrina came along, and you lost your house and the nightclub that you and your husband Emil ran called the Lion's Den.
Yeah.
Those were both destroyed.
Yeah.
You came back. Apparently, you just moved up into Ascension Parish for a while, or I don't know what happened, but you came back.
Oh, yeah.
What is it about New Orleans that you can't get anywhere else that is so vital to your creativity or spirituality, or I suppose those two things could be synonymous
home.
With you?
It's home. That word home covers a multitude of feelings. I mean, it's where I grew up. I wasn't born there, but it was where I grew up. It was where I learned the things I know about music. It was where I honed my craft. It was where people who nurtured me lived, and the business itself, where I learned what I know about the business. It all happened in New Orleans. And my life in general has been centered in New Orleans. I mean, you know, my kids, my husband, all of us, that's where we are. I mean, it's where we want to be.
Well, it seems like some artists at a certain point, you know, they'll take what they have and decide to move to Manhattan or something like that. And it seems like New Orleans just feeds you constantly.
Well, New Orleans feed a lot of folk. Even folk who didn't grow up in New Orleans tend to come to New Orleans and get vaccinated and wind up staying there. When the club was up and running, we know several folk who came to visit for Jazz and Heritage Festival and didn't go back for 6 weeks. And when they did, they came back with a U-Haul truck and moved in. So it's that kind of atmosphere. You, along with the great food and the entertainment that was there, you know, prior to the storm, it's just something you can't get around. I mean, there's some things that we eat in New Orleans you can't find anyplace else. And when you grow up eating those foods and you try to live somewhere else and you ask for that and they look at you with this strange, perplexed look. And it's like, well, you know, it's time for me to go home where I can get that kind of food. There are folk who moved away and when they were on their way trying to get back to New Orleans. In fact, one of the guys in the band I know did it, used to come all the way to New Orleans and get his hot sausage and all of his seasonings and drive all the way back to Tennessee at least once a month until he was able to get back in his home. So it's just something about the food, the way we cook, the atmosphere, the hospitality of New Orleans. We have this tendency to open our hearts and homes to total strangers.
You were talking about cooking. Why don't we try to do that musically? I would like to get one more song out of you before you leave and rest up for your two shows later on. You do a song, you say it's your Bill Withers song.
Yeah, it is a Bill Withers song.
And you can never remember the title of it
because
it's so long.
Well, it's such a long title, and I'm not always sure I get it right. It's Why Does Love That Make Me Laugh Make Me Cry?
You want to take a shot at it?
We'll take a shot at it.
All right.
A chunk of gold. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hard to get, hard to hold. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like a rose, soft to touch. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love has thorns that hurt so much. Does the same once you started, you can't make it stop. Well, then I've given all that I had to give. Why you wanna make me cry?